and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
How about that?
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
Let's get him. Let's get him hard.
Pedro Fernandez.
Better grab me quick before my knees give way.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Coming at you, emanating from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but never duplicated, 35, 36, no, make that 37 plus years now of radio, knocking out all bums. Basically, my name is Pedro Fernandez, and welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, today we've got an hour live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite, of course, Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet platforms. And you might be listening to the show delayed, either on iTunes, of course, or at anchor.com on the podcast. So, any of those ways, we welcome you to the longest-running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, we've got Boxing Night happening, of course, on ESPN Plus. If you don't have the app, well, it's like $10 a month. It's worth getting. ESPN Plus tonight, Jose Pedraza versus Harvey or Molina. These guys are hooking it up at 140 pounds. That's going to be a pretty good fight, no doubt about that. Showtime's got a card going on. Erickson Lubin taking on Terrell Guisha. That's in the WBC super 154-pound super welterweight eliminator. So straight up, there's a couple of fights on Showtime as well. Next week, the big fight, I think, as far as September is concerned, Josh Taylor. I want to see how good this guy really is. Undefeated, the WBA and IBF junior welterweight champion, of course, coming to us from the UK. This kid can really fight. He was an underdog against Bregus Prescott, and he went out there and he beat that. You know what? Bottom line is, he's a fighter to watch. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide, often imitated but never duplicated. Don't forget, the Charlo brothers are coming back. Did I tell you that? I'm going to waste your time. Yeah, the Charlo brothers are coming back on pay-per-view. So if you want to spend $80 to watch the Charlo brothers fight a couple of guys not worthy of fighting, tune in September 26th to pay-per-view for $80 in the Charlo brothers. Outside of that, I can't, I wouldn't recommend that, okay? I wouldn't. I would recommend jumping off a bridge first. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You want to take a chance on that?
Woo, it's going to be good.
12 minutes past the hour, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the Saturday edition. Of course, we come to you Saturday and Sunday on the same station, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, that's 2 p.m. Eastern time. The Saturday show is for an hour, the Sunday show is 2 hours in duration. Now, straight up, Panama Lewis was born November 4th, 1945. He died yesterday. This is the best news I've heard in a long time. You know I don't rejoice in people's death, okay? But to me, he was the Charles Manson of boxing, the Jeffrey Dahmer of boxing. You couldn't get much worse than this man. He was the scummiest person I've ever come in contact with in my life. Let me lay out the history to you. 1982, Alexis Arguello is fighting Aaron Pryor for the World Junior Welterweight Championship. And for some reason, Arguello gets busted up like he's never been busted up in 90 fights. I mean, facial injuries like you've never, ever seen before him. Cuts, bruises, busted bones, the whole nine yards. And, you know, we really couldn't figure out the fact that he was moving up in weight. Well, maybe he wasn't just moving up in weight, because when they went to look for the gloves, Bill Miller was Alexis Arguello's agent, his sort of manager, quasi-manager. He went to look for the gloves. He asked for the gloves afterwards, and the gloves were disappeared from Aaron Pryor's hands in the ring. They disappeared in the ring. They were never found. They were never seen. They have never, ever, ever come to light, not even the trial that took place with Panama Lewis and Luis Resto later. Now, I bring you up to June of 1983. Luis Resto is about to fight Billy Collins in the Garden underneath, of course, Duran and Davey Moore, of course, hooking it up in June of 1983 for that junior middleweight bout. Of course, that brought Dan Duran back to greatness, but Billy Collins was in the supporting bout, the semi-main event. So in the dressing room, Panama Lewis raps Luis Resto's hands. Now, Luis Resto's a fair fighter, not a good fighter, a club fighter. You know, a guy that Billy Collins should, like, smoke out in about three or four rounds without too much problems, okay? So anyway, they wrap Luis Resto's hands, and then they wrap them in plaster of Paris. Remember what that is? Remember when you got a cast, they would wrap the bandage around your hand, and then they would take that thing out and dump it in the water, the warm water, and then they unroll that ball around your hand, and then after a while, they'd wet it in, it would dry up, and it would be hard as a cast. It was a cast, right? Well, guess what? Panama Lewis did that to Luis Resto gloves, to Luis Resto's hands before the fight. Not only to do that, he took the stuffing out of both gloves. They found the padding. They found the padding, okay? They also found there were 3/4-inch holes cut in the palms of each glove. What I'm trying to tell you is that Panama Lewis killed Billy Collins. Within a year, Billy Collins, once an undefeated junior middleweight. I'm not trying to say Billy was going to become world champion and become the next Marvin Hagler or anything like that, okay? Maybe not. But the bottom line is he deserved his opportunity. And those guys, they basically murdered him that night. I mean, they hit him so hard. He said, "Dad," I remember I was watching the fight from the Main Street Theater in Los Angeles, California on closed circuit television with Hector Martinez. And I remember the kid saying to the father, "Dad, it's like he's hitting me with ashtrays." Imagine that. Somebody in the ring, a fighter, just, they knew. They knew. The Collins corner knew. They went right after the gloves after the fight. Went right after the gloves, tore the gloves off. Of course, and then Panama Lewis would eventually stand trial and, of course, go to jail for 3.5 years. And Luis Resto would get 3 years. I think he did like a year and a half. The bottom line is these guys didn't get enough time. Resto spilled the entire beans on Panama Lewis. Talked about how Panama wrapped his hands, in the plaster of Paris cast. Imagine that. A boxer having a cast for a hand. A cast for a hand. Think about that. Holy cow. That's tantamount to hitting somebody with a baseball bat. And this is prize fighting, you know, hand-to-hand. So anyway, Panama Lewis never admits he's wrong. He never admits it. Of course, he goes to jail. Luis Resto goes to jail. He never admits that they have this big thing on TV, this big documentary. He says he has no idea how the padding got taken out of the gloves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's February. I think February 1995 or 1996. Mike Tyson just got out of prison. Maybe it was 96. And it was somewhere around there. Anyway, it was wintertime, and it was cold in Philly. I remember that because I stepped in a puddle and ruined a $125 pair of shoes. Don King thought that was funny. Anyway, so Don and I are in Vegas, in Philadelphia, of course, for the Mike Tyson Buster Mathis Jr. fight. Of course, Mike on the comeback trail. I think this was fight number 2. So anyway, I had the hottest byline at the time, writing for Flash Magazine, Boxing Update Magazine, and a few other magazines throughout the world. I had the hottest byline going. So when I was writing about Panama Lewis being the Charles Manson of boxing, all this kind of good stuff, it got back to Panama. So who did I see in Philadelphia? Panama Lewis. Why did I see Panama Lewis in Philadelphia? Because the Philadelphia or the Pennsylvania Boxing Commission licensed Panama Lewis because they said he had paid a price for his sins. In other words, he went to jail. He never admitted it. He went to jail anyway. This is what Philadelphia said. So they had him licensed, and he was going to work Mike Tyson's corner against Buster Mathis. So he saw me. He said something. I went right at him physically, man. They had to get in between me. Don King said, "Whoa, whoa, Don, whoa, Page, whoa," because he knew. Don said to me later, he goes, "You know, I never seen you that mad, ever. I never seen you that mad." I said, "You know what?" I said, "I never wanted to hurt anybody as bad as I wanted to hurt that dude." He goes, "Why?" I said, "Because of what he did, Don." I said, "You don't." And Don was puffing on a cigar. He goes, "Ah, Pedro, you got to let that go. That's done." No, no, no. You can't let it go. The bottom line is, when you have a man that truly is the Charles Manson or the Jeffrey Dahmer of boxing, he needs to be told that. Now, I was talking with Logan Hobson. He, of course, is the guy that runs CompuBox, and he and I go back 25, 30, maybe 35 years now. Bottom line is, he said that he interviewed Aaron Pryor after the fight the next morning in his hotel room, and that he had bruises on his hands that were like a half inch big. So what am I trying to tell you? That they took the stuffing out of Aaron Pryor's gloves for the first Arguello fight. That's why the gloves have never been found. I mean, that great of a fight, 82. That great of a fight, you think the gloves would have been put in some type of museum. Well, guess what? That didn't happen. The bottom line is the gloves disappeared. And guess what? That piece of spit, and I say spit with an H, guess what? He's done. Panama Lewis, may you not rest in peace. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Now we take it from my excoriation of the recently deceased Panama Lewis to the Bronx Bomber in New York City. I'm talking about Mr. Socrates Palmer, the PhD of boxing and soccer. Hate to bring you in on such a negative note there, but a very good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Pedro. I mean, sometimes, you know, the truth hurts. And, you know, I mean, everyone deserves a second chance in life. And you know, and I believe, you know, none of us are perfect. And if you pay your debt to society and if you show remorse, you know, you should be allowed to somewhat go on with your life. But like you said, Panama Lewis never admitted guilt. He kind of took that to the grave with him. And the irony of the Aaron Pryor fight is, you know, one of the all-time great classic fights. But you don't hear that much about the glove controversy. You know, everything is about the bottle and the mix. And
that was a sideshow.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I mean, ironic. Panama Lewis is dead. Aaron Pryor is dead. And aforementioned Collins is dead as well.
As is Alexis Arguello.
As Alexis Arguello, right. That's crazy. The only one around is Luis Resto out of that drama, who actually I know Resto. He was always cool with me. I used to train at the Morris Park Boxing Club, and just you know, he at least admitted it, you know. And he's gonna have to live with that scar. He lives with that scarlet letter his whole life, you know. So
it basically was murder, because I tell you why, folks, because Billy Collins became an alcoholic. I mean, maybe he drank beforehand. I know his father had a problem with the bottle as far as him, his life was concerned. I had seen him pot drunk a couple times. So maybe he had a problem with the bottle. But the bottom line is, he wasn't drunk that night. He was beaten in a boxing match. He showed up for a boxing match, and somebody ended up taking a pair of real casted hands and beat on him for several rounds, for 10 rounds. At the end of the day, he was dead less than a year later. How? It was a car accident, but a lot of people thought he tried to commit suicide. I called him and tried to get him on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, and he didn't want to come on the show. The father didn't want to come on the show. Nobody wanted to come on the show. The bottom line was, may he rest in peace, but may Panama Lewis not.
Hey, man, it is what it is, man. He was definitely a shady character, a notorious figure in sports, and it's crazy that I believe he only did 18 months for that.
Yeah, and you know. And people are applauding him. I mean, I'm not going to mention names here because I respect these people, but they're actually applauding him. Rest in peace, good dude. I love this guy, this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, listen, I can't, I'm infuriated because, you know, when I think of combat sports, I think of me at 65 pounds, 64 pounds, fighting some guy that was 58 pounds and me having this big weight advantage over him, realizing this wasn't fair after the fight. You hear what I'm saying? This is stuff that you realize later. It was a 6-pound weight advantage, but at that size, that was an incredible advantage, okay? I realized that boxing really wasn't all that straight. And there were times when you could bend the rules, you know, like rolling, like they used to take my gloves and they would roll my gloves. They would roll the padding away from the knuckles and that kind of good stuff to give me a better fist and that kind of stuff. Now, I didn't consider that cheating. I considered that bending the rules to an extent, okay? But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, I wouldn't do anything. I couldn't fight against a guy like Manny Pacquiao, allegedly, who could recover in 15 or 20 seconds, and it takes me a minute to recover when he's cheating with the Flintstone vitamins, or his alleged cheating, I think he was, okay? Or a guy hitting me in the face with a plaster of Paris hand-wrapped gloves with no padding in the glove.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only guy that could probably relate to so the late Billy Collins was, Miguel Cotto, who went through something similar with Antonio Margarito.
Yeah,
you know, and basically we never saw that was kind of like the last time we saw an elite level Miguel Cotto, and it's a shame because when we were naive, no one knew what was going on. That was a great fight between the two, and we didn't know that one guy was had a distinct advantage in Margarito. So
he too had plaster of Paris pads in his gloves wrapped up in his hands, folks. Like, imagine this: you wrap your hands up in bandages, right? So halfway through the bandages, you put in a piece of like a brick. You put a brick in there. In each hand, you put a brick in there. That's what Margarito did. Bottom line is, he's another guy. I can't believe it. I take that back. He's not the Charles Manson of boxing, but he's close. Margarito and that clown that was with him, can't think of his name right now, but the bottom line is, maybe they should have been both banned for life. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We change gears and talk boxing, the positive side, after the break on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Well, you have to talk to my lawyer on that one.
Now, the trial's over with. Panama Lewis is guilty, and he's dead. Bottom line is, you're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, and if I sound like I never liked the guy, like I thought that he was the worst person in the entire world, yes, I did. May he not rest in peace. This show is dedicated to the excoriation of Panama Lewis. May he not rest in peace. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing, MMA. Now, I take it from scum to my, of course, icon from Bronx. From the Bronx, of course, talking about boxing's only PhD, Mr. Socrates Palmer. So tell me, Sock, what's on your mind this week?
Well, we have some good fights on tonight. Nothing great, but good. You know, good fights, evenly matched. Once again, the boxing fan has to decide what he wants to watch, flipping back and forth. I really wish they wouldn't do that, but then again, they don't care. Between ESPN and Showtime, you have on ESPN Top Rank, Jose Pedraza, who is, a real classy pro, you know, mm-hmm. a guy that's not great by any stretch of the imagination. The times that he's had to step up against some of the best, he's come up short. He lost to Lomachenko by decision. I mean, nothing to really be embarrassed about. And then he was devastated by Tank Davis, which was kind of like Tank's coming out party to show he was a legit threat in the world of boxing. He's taking on former Olympian Molina. And it should be a good... Javier Molina, thank you. And it should be a good fight. It's a good crossroads fight. Javier Molina, when he's had to step up, hasn't been able to get over the hump. So it's a real crossroads fight. Former Olympian, Pedraza's 31. It's kind of like make or break. So when you have two guys that are kind of desperate, it could be the last time they headline something. And, of course, it could lead to a title shot. You figure the winner. It makes for a good fight. I'm looking forward to that. And PBC has Erickson Lubin against Terrell Gaucher. Mm-hmm. I'm probably butchering his last name, but another.
No. Crossroad. What I want you to do is I want you to say the Tug guy's name.
Oh, no.
Let me tell you, folks. Let me T-U-G-S-T-O-G-T. Tugsta Ojit. That's what it sounds like. Nayu Ambiar. Taking out Eduardo Ramirez in the WBC featherweight eliminator. You know, Larry Merchant had to practice those names, and he got them down. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't think... I think if I even practiced that, I couldn't do it. Anyway, continue, sir. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. Well, I think... Is he Indonesian? That's why... is it Indonesia that they call those guys 3K battery? There's like a bunch of them.
Yeah, Thailand, Indonesia, something like
Thailand.
That.
Thailand. Yeah. Well, the Tug man, you know, I saw him fight once before. He's on tonight. Should be a good fight. But the guy that I'm really looking forward to, and he's getting a lot of hype from Philly, but he hasn't really fought anybody. But physically, he's got all the tools. Is Jaron Ennis. A lot of people are calling him maybe the most feared man at welterweight outside of the bigger names, you know, Bud Crawford, of course, and Errol Spence or whatnot. But Jaron Ennis is kind of like the guy that, the boxing media has kind of given Virgil Ortiz the mantle of the next big superstar in the welterweight division. And granted, because he's a very talented fighter and he's under good tutelage under Robert Garcia, mm-hmm. he's also Mexican. So he's got a great fan base. He's a moneymaker in the waiting. You know, but Jaron Ennis is kind of like under the radar. He's from Philly. So he comes from a fighting family. I'm interested to see him tonight. But he's fighting a guy that we probably expect him to blow out in Abreu. I saw he's got a few losses. So.
Okay, let's look at the numbers here. Of course, Ennis 25 zip, 23 KOs. Of course, and Mr. Juan Carlos Abreu coming in at 23-5-1. But he can punch. He's got 21 stops and 23 KOs. So I mean, this isn't a guy you want to put your chin out there.
No, absolutely not. But once again, there's a reason that they have an undefeated guy against a guy like Abreu, you know, because he's, you know, he's there to be hit also. You know, he's got five losses, and but I'm very interested to see him in this, and hopefully, you know, before the year's out, he steps up and fights a credible guy, you know, before, you know. I see, you know, the Philadelphia hype train is behind him, you know, but I want to see if he's the real deal.
Okay, we'll keep an eye out for him, of course. Canelo Alvarez, his lawsuit was in the news this week because they got an attorney from La Honda, California, folks, which is like there's like 18 people living in La Honda, maybe 20, okay, including the mayor. I kid you not. So anyway, they go and get an attorney from La Honda, California. They file a lawsuit in San Diego court. And they filed it the wrong papers, this kind of good stuff. So the judge scolds them and says, you know what, I'll give you 25 days or 21 days to restructure this alleged lawsuit. But, of course, Canelo Alvarez suing DAZN and Oscar De La Hoya because he can't get his, what, $35 million a fight? I mean, I'll say this. In these times, as bad as things are, if they told me if I was making $35 I said, listen, an hour, and they said to me, Pete, man, just for this, you got to take 20 an hour. I said, oh, man, I'm going to take it. Oh, man, you can't. But I would probably have to take it because of the considerations of what's going on. The current environment, we don't have people buying tickets.
Yeah, it's a bad look all the way around. Number one, is horrible for boxing. Canelo is the biggest star in the sport. He was supposed to fight this weekend that passed with the Mexican Independence Day. It's kind of been his day the last couple of years. Terrible for the fight game. And it looks very greedy on his part. And I understand an athlete's, you know, earnings and his career is short. We understand that. And no one is guaranteed, you know, but $35 million to be squat. I mean, if you probably took the top 10 in the WBC, their earnings don't add up to $35 million. That's safe.
In their entire career.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's greed. And at the same time, I think Canelo Alvarez, you know, I want to say this. Once Roberto Duran got the money, he wasn't really hands of stone no more. He just wasn't. I mean, I told you, once he got the $1.5 million for the first Leonard fight. It was the most he'd ever made in his life. I think the most he ever got before was like $300,000 or $400,000 for a fight. Okay, so he went from $300,000 or $400,000 to $1.5 million. And then they give him a rematch I told you they gave him like 36 days for the rematch, and he was like 50 pounds overweight. You know what I'm saying? So they offered him $8.5 million for that rematch, though. So they offered him all that kind of money. He couldn't turn it down. You couldn't turn down. I mean, when you're a guy from the hood in Panama, you'll cut off your arm to make that weight. Of course, he cut off his arm to make the weight. He wasn't in good shape. And, of course, Ray was about to knock him out, and he said no mas. But, you know, I think the money ruined Duran. And just money has a bet. Money and boxers. I mean, if I could put them on an allowance forever, I would.
Yeah, well, what's Bob Arum's old line? You got to keep a fighter broke and in tax trouble, right? To keep them hungry. So, you know, I mean, $8 million, bro, that's a lot of money nowadays. Imagine back in, was it 1981?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, there's guys now that don't make $8 million.
Well, anyway, my brother, we'll be watching the fights tonight. Of course, we'll talk to you next week. Say hello to your agent. Say hello to your lovely wife. Have a great week. Try to put some positive on this because, you know, what did I say? Notorious RBG has gone. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
Hey, in the same week that Biggie's crown sold for $650,000, his plastic crown, Notorious RBG, she passes away.
Life is very ironic.
Socrates Palmer on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
Bruce is, you know, was 32 years old. Let me explain something about his death, too, because there's, I guess, so many, you know, rumors that are going about how he passed away and so forth, about touch of death and drugs and so forth. And so I'd like to clarify that before we go on with the demonstration. Is Bruce, in 1968, you know, he's pretty heavy in the weightlifting, as you could tell. He was very well built. And he was lifting weights one night with Kareem Jabbar, who was a student of his when he was in Los Angeles, playing at UCLA. And he tried to lift too heavy weights, and he ruptured the disc in his back, and he was laid up in the hospital for 3 weeks. In fact, the doctor said that they didn't know if he'd be able to walk again or not. But, of course, with a person like Bruce, who's got the drive and determination to achieve anything in life, he was up in about a month, and within 3 months, he was as strong as he ever was. But he had constant back pains from that day on, and he was having to take medication to keep the muscles in the back loose and relaxed. So what happened is that when he was in Hong Kong, preparing for his next movie, he was working with a girl named Betty, and who was going to co-star with him, and he got a severe headache. So Betty gave him some antibiotics for the headache, and with the medication he had taken for his back and the medication he had taken for his headache, they reacted to each other and made his brain swell up, and it created an aneurysm, or ruptured blood cells in his brain, and that's actually what happened. So if anyone asks you what happened, then you can tell them the true story.
So that's what happened to Bruce Lee. According to Chuck Norris, everybody says to me, what happened to Bruce Lee? Well, bottom line is a woman killed him. She gave him some pills that he wasn't supposed to be taking, some unprescribed pills, and Bruce Lee was dead. Bottom line is, man, you know, what can I say? He was the iconic figure of mixed martial arts. God knows what would happen, how the world of MMA would have evolved had Bruce Lee stayed alive. Of course, died in 1973 at the age of, what, 33 years old? Bottom line is, MMA rocking and rolling tonight, of course, Colby Covington, Donald Trump's favorite fighter. What is he, 19, take it back, 15-2, of course. He's been stopped once, and of course, he's been knocked out once, but he's a hell of a fighter. There's no doubt about it. And right now, he's almost a 4-1 favorite over the former champion, Tyrone Woodley. Of course, Woodley coming in at 19-5, but he looks so uninspired of late, so we really don't know what Woodley's going to show up. At one point in time, he was a really good fighter. I mean, he was a champion. He defended the title a few times, but somehow he just lost his mojo. Once he lost to Adesanya, the current champion, I mean, that was the sort of it. He lost his mojo. And speaking of the current champion, he'll be getting on next week against a monster by the name of Paulo Acosta. I'll get to that in a minute. But the bottom line is USC is going tonight. I said Colby Covington in the main event, of course, coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. They still got that thing going in Vegas. I think next week they're going to switch to back to Dubai. But Colby Covington taking on Tyrone Woodley in a 5-round bout at 170 pounds. Of course, they went in at 170 yesterday, knowing mixed martial arts. These guys are about 195, 190, 195 today. That's not fair. Donald Cerrone, the Cowboys and Nico features taking on Nico Price. There's a monster on the car at middleweight. This is like the next Khabib. His name is Khamzat Chimaev, and he's taking on a guy by the name of Gerald Merchkai. But the bottom line is Gerald's going to be lunch meat within like one round. I've seen this guy fight, and he looks like a monster. Good Lord. Another guy that weighs in like at 185 pounds and comes into the octagon, the cage, or the ring of battle, call it what you want, at better than 200 pounds. I don't think guys should go in that kind of weight because it's an unfair advantage. And I told you once before, I've told you 1,000 times, size matters in two things, pornography and combat sports. Also on the card, Johnny Walker taking on Ryan Spann. Outside of that, Mackenzie Dern is in a woman's strawweight bout, 150 pounds, taking on Randa Markos. The rest of the UFC schedule, ho-hum, ho-hum, ho-hum. It just is. Of course, next week you've got, as I said, Paulo Costa. If ever there was a guy that was a poster boy for steroids, this guy looks like the guy to me. He looks, I mean, I'm not saying I'm definitely sure he's on steroids. I'm just trying to say, if there's a guy that looks like he's on Flintstone vitamins, it's this guy. He is a monster. 12-0. I think he's got 12 knockouts. Of course, the champion is a bad dude, no doubt about it. Israel Adesanya has beaten everybody they put in front of him. I mean, everybody they put in front of him. 19 fights, 19 wins. How many by knockout? 14. 5 by decision. Bottom line is he's not a submission artist. He knocks people out and or beats them up boxing. At the end of the day, he's a, get this, like, you know, an incredible favorite here, and he should be. I mean, because the champion is, he's an incredible athlete. He just is. I mean, I watch him work, guys. He's a favorite here in some of the sports books. But then once the Brazilian money gets rolling in on Costa, and there will be some Brazilian money on this one, okay, I think the odds are going to slide back towards Costa, and I think Costa will end up being the favorite, or close to the favorite, come fight time. because money moves the line. I think these people down there in Brazil think this guy is the next rising star, of course, the next phenom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the next iconic fighter. I don't know. He might be just another guy on Flintstone Vitamins. Dominic Reyes and the co-feature taking on Jan Blachowicz. That's going to be a good fight at light heavyweight, 205 pounds. Of course, these guys are going to fight, for a vacant title. This is for the vacant title, of course. John Jones, the former UFC light heavyweight champion for a long time. I mean, the real guy. The real deal of 205 pounds, unbeaten, except for that one disqualification loss that he had. You know, of course, we also have the Flintstone Vitamins issues, but he's moving up to heavyweight. He says he wants to fight heavyweight. And that will be one hell of an encounter, John Jones and anybody else at heavyweight. Of course, the current heavyweights walk around, and some of them at 265 pounds walk into the octagon weighing 265, which is the division limit. That's as much as you can weigh, okay? And he's going to come in about 215, 220 max. I mean, he's not going to be able to put too much more weight on a 205-pound body. I look at him physically, and I say to myself, yeah, he can fight at heavyweight. There's no doubt about it. He's long, lean, 6'2". I mean, he can punch. He can fight. He can wrestle. I mean, he's a complete fighter. There's no doubt about it, and when he's not on steroids, but at heavyweight, I mean, Stipe Miocic, he beats Stipe Miocic. I mean, sorry, Stipe, but he beats you. He just does. I mean, just like he beat Cormier time and time and time again. Of course, Cormier is saying that a couple of those fights were, I'm going to say, sort of shady one for sure with Flintstone Vitamins, but Cormier, never my favorite fighter. He's now a fighter being groomed for the WWE. I mean, the most unexciting fighter, the most... I've had him in the studio. He signed the wall out here for us, okay? He's not a great interview. I don't know what the selling point in Cormier was other than he was a tough old guy with a gut that got it done. I mean, that's about all I can say about Daniel Cormier. And you know what? He won fights I didn't think he was going to win. He beat Josh Barnett. He beat Frank Mir. When he beat Frank Mir as easily as he beat Frank Mir, I was like, whoa, my mind, whoa. But, of course, he went on to bigger and greater things, so... As far as the heavyweight divisions right now, it's all about Francis Ngannou. Of course, a twice-beaten guy, originally from Africa. Then he went to Paris. He was fighting professional as a boxer in Paris and then switched over to MMA. Of course, he lost that first title fight to Stipe Miocic in 5 rounds. Had Miocic out in the first round, but he couldn't put him out. Had him rolling and rolling. I mean, Stipe was like in bad shape. But Stipe came back and won a 5-round decision. Because Francis had no ground game. Francis had no B to the A. There was an A, A, A. He had no B. And that meant stand-up fighting. Of course, the most awesome puncher. And I think he punches harder than Ernie Shavers and or George Foreman. In fact, speaking of George Foreman, somebody wanted to know who punched harder, George Foreman or Mike Tyson. So I went to the guy that fought them both. I'm talking about Dave Jaco. He was on the show a couple weeks ago. I forgot to ask him this, so I asked him when I called him. He said Foreman hit harder than Tyson. Tyson hit faster, but Foreman hit harder. There was just no doubt about it. Once Foreman hit you, it was all over. So as far as the heavyweight division in the world of mixed martial arts is concerned, without Francis Ngannou fighting for the title, I don't want to see any more heavyweight fights. I really don't. As far as the rest of the year is concerned, of course, Khabib coming back, the UFC lightweight champion, unbeaten in his lifetime, never lost a round in a gym, of course, out of the American Kickboxing Academy down here in Silicon Valley, USA, October 25th, at a site to be determined. I think they're back and they're going to do this in Dubai, at the Flash Forum. Not set in stone yet, but I don't think Khabib wants to come over to the United States because they won't let his father over here, something like that. Something about his father might be, his father was a bit shady, I think, and he couldn't get a passport to certain places. Anyway, Khabib versus Justin Gaethje going down October 25th. Of course, that's going to rock and roll, no doubt about it, for the lightweight championship. But again, Justin Gaethje will be at a severe disadvantage because when Khabib weighs in 155 pounds, he goes out and gains 20 pounds and comes in like close to 180. So what I'm trying to tell you is that imagine this. You're a 147-pound fighter, like a welterweight. I'll take you back. Take you back to my weight, 139 pounds. You weigh 139 pounds. You get into the ring maybe about 143, 144, maybe. I mean, maybe. If you weigh in the morning, you gain 3 or 4 pounds. Yeah, that's about it, okay? You don't pose a significant, as we begin to get said again, size matters in two things, combat sports and pornography. But you don't get a tremendous advantage over a couple of pounds in a boxing match, okay? You can after you get significant amounts of weight. Of course, like Orlando Salido mugging of Vasyl Lomachenko, ruining that undefeated record. But for the most part, you know, you don't have people laying on top of you that weigh 20 pounds more than you. I mean, how do you lift a guy off you that weighs 20, 25 pounds more than you? You can't do it without straining yourself or going the extra. I mean, it's just not fair. That's why they have weight limits. I think the guy should be able to weigh what they fight at. In other words, if he's going to defend the title at 155, let him stand outside the octagon when he steps into the ring and steps into that cage at 155 pounds. Let's weigh everybody before they get on the before they go in the fight. I mean, let's do it that way. Let's make combat sports fair. This idea of weighing guys in the day before. I remember when the concept first came into play. It was 1988, of course. Frank Tate, the 1984 Olympic gold medalist, was having a hard time making weight, defending the IBF 160-pound championship against Michael Second to None. And they decided, actually, his manager, Bob Spagnuolo, asked the network and the athletic commission to hold the weigh-in a day early. So they held the weigh-in a day early, and, of course, he was dying. Frank Tate was barely made the weight as he did. Of course, didn't fight much after that, but he was the champion. But that was the beginning of the day before weigh-ins. Then they said it was safer to weigh guys in the day before than it was the day of the fight because guys get a chance to rehydrate themselves. But back to what I was saying, if you're fighting at the weight you're supposed to be fighting at, hey, you know, I mean, I fought at junior welterweight. I could make junior welterweight. If you wanted me to step into the ring at 139 pounds, I could have done so. Okay? That makes me a junior welterweight. Okay? But when you're a junior welterweight and you step, I remember one guy I fought, okay, I mean, I'll tell you the truth. We weighed in at 141 pounds for the National Golden Glove Championships in Las Vegas, Nevada. I think we were at the Showboat. And I fought Ernie Chavez. And Ernie Chavez weighed in at 147. And when we fought the following Friday, we weighed in on a Tuesday. When we fought the following Friday, I got a bye. And I was supposed to fight, and that didn't happen. I mean, that was nerve-wracking. Imagine that. You're sitting in the Showboat Hotel about to fight. You're all wrapped up in gloves and everything. And then they called off the fight. Anyway, that moved me up a bracket as far as to the semifinals were concerned, and I ended up hanging with a guy named Ernie Chavez, okay, who looked really fat. I mean, when I saw him at the weigh-in, he looked like a real skinny guy. When I saw him in the ring, he looked really fat and big. And I said to the people working in my corner, this is not the same guy. This is not the same guy I weighed in against. This is his brother. And they're looking at me, man, have you been smoking weed in the locker room? No, I'm telling you, this ain't him. Something's wrong. Something's rotten in Denmark. It was him. He gained, get this, he weighed in at 147 steaming. He was 168 plus when he got into the ring that night with me. So, you know, I mean, I'm boxing this fat guy around until he hit me. Hit me with that right hook. It was a southpaw. Hardest I've ever been hit in my life. Talk about getting hit with an ashtray. I think that was it. Bottom line is he dropped me twice, and I knew that the end was near. And the referee asked me, do you want to do any more? I said, hell no. Stop this fight right now. And they stopped in the second round. What I'm trying to tell you was he had that 20-pound weight advantage, okay? That played a significant role because he hit me a lot harder than somebody would if they were weighing in my weight class. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So guys that gain weight, women that gain weight, Chris Cyborg Santos, of course, she's one of them, and she weighs in at 145. She comes into the cage at 165, 170 pounds. This is not fair. Why do they have weight classes? Why even have weigh-ins if you're not going to make people get to weight or fight at weight? I remember when I fought in, was it Tucson, Arizona? We went down there to fight in the World Police Games. And get this, folks. Guess what the weigh-in was? I show up at the weigh-in. I'm like, it was 147 pounds. So I had no problems making that back in the day at all. I was weighing in 141 for welterweight fights. So anyway, 142. Because I was lazy, didn't want to make the 39, cut the extra 2 pounds, which was a mistake. But, you know, I went down to Tucson, Arizona, fought in the World Police Games. And they had the official weigh-in the day of the fights. So I show up to this auditorium in Tucson, this and that, and I'm down there by myself because the cornermen I'm going to be working with, they're going to be brought in from Tucson, and they're going to meet me later in the day. So I'm going to go to the weigh-in all by myself. So I go to the weigh-in, and there's no scale. So the guy says to me, you're fighting this guy. And I said, wait, where's the scale? He goes, you look about his size. I kid you not. The World Police Games, that's boxing. You're tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Next up, we'll talk about tonight's fights, of course, coming to you live both on Showtime and ESPN+. Mike Tyson's fighting again. You interested in coming back to fight Mike Tyson, maybe?
Yeah, I'd love to fight him, man. I could take him now, Pedro.
You could why would you say you could take him now? What's the difference between now and 1986?
Well, because he's owned Sloan. I need to give me 2 months, at least 8 to 10 weeks to train for him, I can, my boxing skills are better than his.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I'm just ready to get it on and crush this guy's skull.
This is the Tower of Power harmonizing from like 2007, 2008. Man, they can really rock, can't they? You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. Now, scheduled for the Sunday show, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Sunday, of course, September 20th, 2020. We expect the iconic HBO Godfather himself, talking about Larry Merchant, to spend some time with us, if we are lucky. And of course, Kenny Rayford from the UK will be here. And the man that discovered Manny Pacquiao, the Pac-Man. I'm talking about Sidney Hall. Sidney Hall is committed to tomorrow. Sidney Hall is a bit of a flake when it comes to interviews, but he's an attorney from Burlingame, California, and we hope to get him on tomorrow to talk about, of course, how he discovered Manny Pacquiao and how he told me about this little fiery Filipino and all this kind of good stuff. And I was like, yeah, over a lunch one night. Yeah. But the bottom line is, look what happened to the Pac-Man. Still rock and rolling, 41 years old, of course, the WBA welterweight title holder. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Often imitated but never duplicated. This is actually, we're celebrating our 37th year in radio today. And I didn't make a big deal about it because the bottom line is it's not really a big deal. It's just another show. So I hope I entertained you. I hope I informed you. And the bottom line is, you know, I talk from the heart, as honest as I can. It had been for 37 plus years. And you know, and there's a million things you could be doing right now. The fact you listen to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, well, guess what? Pedro Fernandez thanks you from the bottom of my heart. Bottom line is, don't forget, our podcasts are at anchor.com, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Until next time, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, live on these same stations, Ring Talk Live Worldwide.